Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Andy Cohen, editor of Counselor Magazine, and we have a great show planned for you today. I'm joined by a merry band of characters here in the studio. We have many of us that are traveling to Dallas for the ASI Dallas show today. So me and Kathy Houston are here. Kathy, how are you today?
I'm just fabulous, Andy.
You're just fabulous.
Yes, I am.
Wow.
How about you?
Too.
Good.
We are also joined by Joan Chaykin, managing editor here at ASI. Joan, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Everyone's favorite managing editor, Andy.
Everyone's favorite managing editor here at ASI.
When Joe's not here.
We're pretty sure Joe's not listening, so that's okay.
We can say that.
We are also joined by Andy Van Treese, editorial intern here at ASI. Andy, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful.
Now, Andy and myself have the same name, obviously. So, Andy, what do you go by in this office?
I go by Gandy. So it's Girl Andy.
So we'll call you Gandy for the day here today.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're getting ready to take your calls on any customer service challenges you have. Have any tough clients that you want to get some advice on, give us a ring at 215-953-4979, and we'll offer up some advice for those customer service challenges. But before we get started, Kathy, give us a little rundown of what we're going to talk about today.
Well, Andy, you know our buddy CJ Medica?
I do know our buddy CJ.
Well, he's at the Magic Show in Vegas, and he's going to be calling in and giving us a live report.
He's back from
Very
the blackjack
exciting.
Tables?
Yeah, I guess so. We're still at them. He's calling from his cell. And we will take your calls about your toughest customer service challenges, so call at 215-953-4979. Joan is going to let us know five things you should never say while negotiating. And Girl Andy is going to give us three trends shaping B2B marketing. And I'm going to let you know how to price your business services. But first, we're going to go to the news with Andy.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. We begin this morning with big distributor acquisition news. Last week, BDA acquired selected assets of Logistics, a subsidiary of Los Angeles-based marketing services agency EMAC Worldwide. The deal includes key personnel and customer accounts from Logistics' U.S., Hong Kong, and Shenzhen, China offices. This is BDA's third acquisition in the past 12 months after purchasing former top 40 distributor Avigna last May and assets of Round Rock, Texas-based Hotlink in the beginning of 2010. More distributor acquisition news now. Pittsburgh-based HDS Marketing has acquired Phoenix-based distributor Team Shop Premiums. Through the deal, HDS has increased its sales team by seven people, who all will remain based in offices in Phoenix, Kansas City, and Utah. HDS expects the deal to help it generate more than $13 million in sales this year. Canadian distributor acquisition news now. Talbot Marketing finalized an asset purchase on Friday of Coyle and Greer. The deal will add 13 new salespeople to Talbot's more than 100 sales partners. And finally, this morning in apparel market news, Gildan said last week that revenues in its most recent quarter improved by 50% and profits jumped by more than 25%. Check out Promogram today for more details. Plus, make sure to also check out the latest episode of The Joe Show and Promogram today. Joe may not be with us today, but he recorded a special new products episode before taking off for Dallas. Thank you very much, Joe. All right, now we want to get to the phone lines and bring in CJ Medica, editor of Wearables Magazine. CJ, how are you today?
Hey, good morning, Andy. I'm doing great.
Good. Now, you are at the Magic Show there in Las Vegas, and it's not real magic. It's an apparel show, right?
Oh, it's fashion magic, Andy.
Or, maybe you're making your own kind of magic. So what can you tell us about what's going on there at the Magic Show?
So, you know, the first thing when I got there, Women's Wear Daily, they had their show edition. Right on the front page, they were saying that fur is having a moment. So, and you can tell that, you know, fur is really being reincorporated. There's been an emphasis just on, I think, luxury fashions that aren't overly showy. So manufacturers now are incorporating fur in different uses, incorporating in outerwear as part of a, you know, an alpine rustic look, and they're you know, doing different things with texture, like a nappy curly shearling that's gotten a lot of play on the show floor.
Now, does that mean that we can expect to see you in some fur?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be happy to wear it in the offices just to make sure the trend catches on. But you know, I think it's definitely been a bigger emphasis that they've been talking about. There's been supposedly some pushback of oh yeah, the bling, the showy side of fashion is sort of you know, giving way to a more, I think, classic luxury in fashion. But you know, on the same point, you know, I was talking with I was talking with a t-shirt designer yesterday, and they said that they stopped doing rhinestones because supposedly, you know, everybody said they're on their way out, and all the customers kept asking, well, where's all the rhinestone apparel? So even though that's what they're saying, I think there's still a big emphasis on decoration and bling as well.
Cool. Now give us one more highlight or something you're expecting to see there at the show today.
Well, it's actually interesting, you know, not particularly on the fashion side, but the talk about the cotton prices and how and the sourcing concerns. You know, I went to a seminar that talked about sourcing's new decade, and basically they expect that the cotton prices are really just not going to be much relief. They already said that 33% of 2012's cotton crop is already sold through, and that while the farmers may be increasing their cotton production, the demand for it is still going to be just as ravenous. So that those prices really are not going to see much relief in the next couple years.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there was a report yesterday from one of the textile manufacturers or something that said that retail clothing prices were going to go up 10% for spring because of those cotton costs. So it's obviously a big trend that you're seeing out there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the emphasis still is on fashion, but there's still also a lot of concern just on sourcing, on prices, and I think that's sort of casting a little bit of a shadow over the show as well.
Cool. All right, CJ. Well, we don't want to take you away from the crafts table, so make your way back.
And Kathy, I'll have you know that Snooki is launching her line of slippers, so it's very exciting. I can take pictures if you want.
Can you get me a pair?
I can grab you a pair. I don't know.
Snooki.
I have to probably wrestle it from Snooki's hands.
Did you actually see Snooki?
No, I didn't see her yet. I think the launch is today, though. It's the first for the slippers, though, because just like the TV show, they somehow make my head hurt. So I don't know how that's going to work.
Well, get us some pictures if you get any Snooki FaceTime, okay?
I will. We can put up on ASI Central.
Perfect. All right. Have a good one, CJ. Thanks for calling us.
Snooki.
Thanks, guys.
Snooki always makes it into the conversation.
I know. That's happened.
Sort of amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
She's awfully pervasive. Kind of like that Justin Bieber character that we all agree that we hated here. Okay, moving on. We're getting ready to take your calls on any customer service challenges that you have. So if you have any clients that are giving you some problems or just looking for new ways to provide customer service to your best clients, give us a call at 215-953-4979. All right, on line one, we have Jim. Jim, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Doing great. What's your question for the host?
Well, you know, over the past 6 months or so, the amount of orders we've been receiving have really picked up. How do we ensure that we're still providing great service when we're working so hard to fulfill so many orders?
Kathy's already raising her hand, so I think she's got an answer.
Actually, I was stretching, but that's great that your business is picking up. I think that's a sign of the times, too, because a lot of distributors report that their businesses are picking up, and my suggestion would be to hire some seasonal part-time help.
I will do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you say, Andy?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I would also say to take a good look at your customer list and try to determine, you know, almost segmenting your list. I've given this advice before, but by sort of A, B, and C clients. And maybe you put your top earners or the companies that offer you the most orders into the A category and so on down to the B and C. And you segment your service that way. You know, you want to be spending your best amount of time with your best customers. So you want to make sure that you're not, you know, wasting time on the customers that, you know, maybe just have an order once a year or even once every other year. Those can be the ones sometimes that really take up a lot of your efforts. So I agree with Kathy. Try to ramp up on the personnel side for sure, so that you have enough manpower to fulfill the orders, but also take a critical look at the service you're providing and make sure you're providing it to the right ones.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, Jim,
Thanks
for calling in. Hang on for your Visa gift card.
Thanks.
On line three, we have Donna. Donna, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you guys?
Good. What's your question for the host?
Well, I had a customer order recently that went wrong. What happened is the products that were for an event, they got delivered, and they were the wrong color. And my client called me after the fact and let me know how disappointed she was. And I don't think I've lost her forever, but obviously she's not very confident in me anymore as a vendor. So I'm wondering what I can do to make it up to this client who I don't want to lose.
Don't all jump in at once.
Go ahead,
no,
Andy.
I'm kidding. Go ahead, John.
Just going to say, saying you're sorry goes a long way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of times taking responsibility, owning the problem, even if it's not your fault,
right,
and apologizing, being transparent, letting them know what the situation is and letting them know how important their business is to you and that you would do everything, you know, assure them that you're working and you want to keep them and that you respect them and that, you know, you're going to go out of your way to make sure it doesn't happen and take care of the situation. But apologizing and you know, realizing it is the first step.
And I think after that, you know, obviously something did go wrong, so you have to figure that out within, you know, your business. Maybe there was a miscommunication somewhere along the line. So, you know, after admitting you were wrong and saying sorry, you have to turn back to your own employees and see what happened and really do make sure that it doesn't happen again.
And if it's a supplier problem, you get them to help you out on the reimbursement end of things. I would say, like Joan said, take responsibility for it. Sure. I mean, you're the one that chose the supplier to work with, but also get the supplier to help you reimburse the client.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with all of those things. I think that you want to for sure take ownership of the problem and not just blame it on a supplier. You know, it may have been their fault, but you're the vendor. So you have to own that error and like Joan said, own up to the mistake. From there, you know, I think you want to try to win them over, not just with the type of service you provide, but with the ideas that you can offer as well. You know, you're an idea provider, and you want to show them that you can be a marketing partner for them, and, you know, not just a commodity fulfiller. You know, in this case, that you know, you may have gotten an order wrong. And, you know, that you have to make up for that. But you can also in the future, assuming you haven't lost the client, like you said, make it up by providing ideas that maybe they hadn't thought of before.
Okay.
All right, Donna, well, hang on so Vinny can get your information, and hopefully that helped you out today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, well, now we're going to pause for a message from our sponsor, I Promote You. But when we get back, we'll hear about the things you should never say while negotiating.
This portion of ASI Radio is sponsored by I Promote You. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with I Promote You today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. I Promote You, the smart choice. For more information, call 800-850-3370 or email opportunities@ipromoteyou.com.
All right, welcome back to the Tuesday morning show on ASI Radio. Give us a call at 215-953-4979 if you have anything to discuss or have any customer service challenges that you want us to bat around. But now I want to go to Joan and talk about the things that you should never say while negotiating. Obviously, our listeners do a lot of negotiations every day. So, Joan, what should they make sure they never say to win negotiations?
Well, one thing they shouldn't say is the word between. So, in other words, once you say that, the word, say, you know, I can get that for you between $10,000 and $15,000, you automatically conceded ground without extracting anything in return. Two, don't say, I think we're close. The moment you want to, you know, you want to complete the deal, you have deal fatigue. So the problem with arriving at this crossroads is that you've just indicated that you value simply reaching an agreement over getting what you actually want. A skilled negotiator on the other side may well use that moment as an opportunity to stall and thus negotiate further concessions. So you want to create a situation in which your counterpart is as eager to finalize the negotiations as you. You don't want to say, why don't you throw out a number? Many people believe that you should never be the first person in a negotiation to quote a price. Let the other side start bidding, the thinking goes, and they'll be forced to show their hands.
That is so true, but people fall into the trap of almost not saying anything
right,
when they do that. So, you know, be careful being wary of not saying
right,
a number, actually still say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, you when a seller makes the first offer, the final settlement price tends to be higher than when the buyer makes the first offer. That's what they, you know, some of the studies have found. One thing you don't want to do is let your emotions take hold. And, you know, you want to remain calm and you don't want to, you know, come out and say something. So one of the words that
be careful with what you're going to say here.
It's very prevalent. So therefore, We're going to use CeeLo's song, also known as Forget You.
Yes, yes, you you do want to make sure not to kiss off the person, right?
Right.
In some
exactly.
certain way.
So if you, you know, you want to remember that it pays to stay calm. And, you know, even if a low counteroffer is annoying, a person becomes angry, you don't want to take that bait and strike back.
Absolutely. So. Don't let the emotions get the better of you, like CeeLo says.
So. Exactly.
That's right.
So there you go. All right. Thank you, Joan. We have a couple more callers on the line. Let me go to Bill on line one. Bill, how are you this morning?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What is your question?
My question is this. I've been in this business for probably 40 years or better, and I've never really tackled a large customer before. So I now have a large customer that I have to bid on some items. The items have relatively large quantities, 50,000 or plus, 50,000 plus, and I know that they're not willing to pay a dime up front. So how do I work with my suppliers to try to handle this?
To handle the cost up front, is
yeah,
that what your question
yeah.
is? You know, that's a tough issue. You could, if you go to your preferred suppliers, then they might work with you on the credit up front. That's the first step, I would say. Otherwise, you might need to do some financing on your end, you know, and look at your bank relationships or credit partners and try to get a line of credit to fulfill the deal up front. You know, that is an issue for smaller distributors, that certainly they run into trying to finance the orders up front when they get a big one. Have you had that kind of deal before, or
no,
is it not that size, right?
No. I'm just doing, you know, smaller orders that I can manage.
Right.
This one is becoming one that I don't think I can manage.
Yeah, you know, it's exciting in the sense that you get a bigger deal, but you do have
right.
to be concerned with that upfront cost. You know, you could also try to look to other distributor partners in the industry and see if you could partner up with a company that might have more capital behind it and work out
yeah.
a deal, you know, where you sort of split the upfront cost.
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. As a matter of fact, I got an idea already.
There you go.
Hey,
all right, Bill. Well, hopefully, good. Hopefully that works out for you. Hang on the line so Vinny can get your information. All right, on line two, we have Bob. Bob, how are you this morning?
How are you guys this morning?
Good.
Bob, what's your question or comment this morning?
Well, you know, when a job goes wrong, what I've always stressed is I never ever blame the vendor.
Right.
I just walk right in and I say, Mrs. Smith, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and I'm here to help you fix it. And you know what can you do? And sometimes the customer just has to vent. You just have to sit there and take it for 10 minutes.
Sure.
And listen to it. And that's a really important phase in getting to a solution. You know, they're unhappy. Maybe they were embarrassed in front of their colleagues or their boss. And, you know, they're all looking at her saying, well, you're a bozo. You went with this Bob guy, you know.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, that I always stress is, and not blaming the vendor, is saying, this is an experienced vendor. We use them because they're a five-star vendor in our industry. And I reinforced what we talked about when we were placing the order. And I think that goes to a lot. And then I just wrap up saying, hey, we're all human. We all take our turn. And unfortunately, you were involved when somebody took their turn. And what I've always offered is we'll rerun the job. We'll credit the job. Or we'll give you a credit on the next job.
Now, Bob, let me ask you this: when you follow up with your customers and you're obviously not blaming the vendor, that's something that they must appreciate in the sense that you know you're taking ownership of the whole deal, not just the taking of their order, but actually the fulfillment as well.
Well, and it's self-enabling at the same time. Like if I made the boo-boo, I'm the one that can fix the boo-boo. I don't have to go to anybody else and get it okayed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right here in front of you. How should we handle this?
Right. All right, Bob. Well, thanks very much for calling in and giving us some advice this morning.
Great. Have a good show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
All right, on line three, we have a caller, Irv, who actually has an answer to the previous caller, Bill, about his question about upfront financing. So, Irv, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
Great. What's your solution for our previous caller?
I don't know. If the gentleman's been in business for 40 years, he's been doing business with his vendors for a long period of time, and he's established his credit. So a lot of times, if you're net 30, if you call and talk to the vendor that's going to provide the product, if you say for this one-time large order, if you could extend my terms to net 60, it gives you that cushion you need before you receive your payment for your product.
Right.
That you can pay off when that time comes due. So to me, I think that that would be worth exploring.
Right. So really talk to your vendors about the types of payment plans that they can put you on almost for this one time.
Exactly. Exactly. And I also thought about the difficult customer segment.
Yep.
You know, what we learn in the business I'm in is sometimes you have to gift some of the customers back because they create more problems for you than you know, I don't care how good you are. Sometimes you just need to say, I'm stepping away from this and, let them try to bother someone else.
Right. Yeah, you do have to know when to so-called fire a client, isn't that right?
That's it.
All right, Irv. Well, thanks very much for the call and for the advice this morning. And hang on so Vinny can get your information for your Visa gift card.
Thank you very much.
All right, Gandy, I'm going to you now. Three trends that are shaping B2B marketing. What can you tell us?
Okay, well, basically what we're seeing now is cold calling is pretty much on the back burner, and a lot of marketing is getting very personal with its customers in order to reach them and, to really get their business. So what customers are looking for now is data, a lot of data. You need to quantify your value to customers in terms of dollars and cents, something known as customer value creation. So basically, you need to help them understand, how much more money am I making as a customer doing business with your company versus businesses B and C.
Yeah, I want to echo that. It's amazing how much the talk of, ROI has increased in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
It's obviously always a very big topic, but with people, clients and marketers putting such a premium on the money that they're spending over the past, 12 months, 18 months, everybody has to do everything they can to prove value and show that they're, with data, like you said, showing that they're making money or meeting goals that their clients want.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the next thing is, targeting online identities. A big thing now is to, give relevant information to relevant people. Email blasts are still in, but what they're doing now is analyzing online behavior of people, especially for online companies. It's called digital body language of individuals involved in the business-to-business industry. It's just an effort to pinpoint the specific buyer whose needs best fit the services of the seller.
Mm-hmm.
So what some companies are doing now are using specific softwares, and they're scoring the visitors that come to their website. So from there, they can target customers based on their online behavior rather than the demographics provided by the firm or the industry. So that's, it's marketers are interested in delivering relevant content to relevant people. They're stopping the irrelevant contact to the irrelevant people. Sorry.
Right. All right, give us one
easy
more.
For you to say. Yeah.
Not so easy to say. One more B2B marketing trend.
Okay, one more is just get creative with the content. A lot of companies are becoming expert bloggers and content creators, and it's interesting because with all these social media things, the company website, the Twitter stream, LinkedIn, and even the employees' personal blogs are becoming a lot more popular. And it's just interesting to see because a lot of people have up videos and they just have a more real-time marketing. So, you can even have, like this one company says, they even have some spelling mistakes in it. If it's a video, it might just be very quick.
Wow.
Intercom.
We're getting some intercom announcements.
God.
Ignore the intercom announcements if you heard that as well. Okay. Go ahead, Andy.
So basically just, kind of staying up on the social media thing and if you're blogging, then you have to have, so many blogs a day. You just really have to you target your audience and be into, you know, the streams that they're on.
There we go again. All right, great advice and important information regarding marketing trends. Obviously, all of our listeners, well, most of our listeners probably get involved in product launches that their clients do.
Yeah.
So, Kathy, what can you tell them about how to throw a product launch event?
Right, Andy. Well, you're right. Distributors are like more involved in their client special events than ever, and this includes product launches when their client has a great new product. But first of all, before you have a launch event, you have to determine your client's purpose. For example, are they shooting for product distribution, media coverage, consumer awareness, sales, or outreach to some heavy-hitting influencers? And once you know your client's end game, you can begin inviting, you know, the proper audience. There are three main types of events: trade events, media events, and consumer events. So, like, if you're looking for coverage in newspapers and magazines about your client's product, then obviously you'd hold a media event. Second thing to keep in mind is scouting out your location. Don't be afraid to think outside of the box. Somebody's really looking for Jim Marte. The word event is changing, and you have to think beyond press conferences and cocktail parties. Launch events can include, these days, as we all know and written about, street teams, mobile marketing, flash mobs, and cyber events.
Those are huge now.
Definitely.
All those types of live events are just so big.
It's and they engage the target base.
And
so,
that's the whole point,
right,
is that your client is trying to engage their customers in new ways, and those are all very new ways that people are using.
Yeah, those are definitely new ways. And
okay, one more.
Okay, if it's an event specifically targeted at consumers, you might try something like an event discount to consumers who buy the product at the event to give them a reason to go. You have to give your audience a reason to go, or they're not going to show up.
Give them a reason.
Mm-hmm. One more. The last.
One more.
Very important. Follow up after the product launch.
Very important.
Follow up.
Very
we say
important.
That about everything.
Yeah.
That's key.
No, it's true, especially for a live event. You know, you've you've touched people, the clients in new ways and in unique ways, but you have no idea if you don't ask them afterwards how it worked. So make sure you do that and make sure your clients do that. All right, it's time for our favorite segment of the week. It's Our Favorite Things, and Joan is going to lead us off. Joan, what's your favorite thing of the week?
My favorite thing is this cute little doctor in a bottle I call it. It's a little
doctor in a bottle.
Joan likes cute little doctors.
All right.
It's this hand sanitizer, and they're great for keeping your purse. And I'm a bit of a germaphobe, so I like to if I'm out shopping and I want to stop and get a bite to eat, you know, I can't wash my hands. There's no place to go. So take your little hand sanitizer out, and you know you can rinse off right there. And then it's only 2.2 ounces. It's a citrus scent. It's a flip top lid, but it comes in a lot of different styles.
Right.
But the doctor one was cute. I like that.
Yeah, and these are great for teams and everything. They have, like, you know, soccer teams, football teams, whatever, business people, wardrobes, all kinds of different wardrobes.
It's from Akron Rule.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Doctor in a bottle. All right, Andy, you are up.
Okay. My favorite product is it's a stadium jacket. It has a built-in seat that
does it have fur?
It does not have fur, but I'm sure you could somehow get it on the hood. That'd be perfect. CJ would like it.
Yeah,
but it's cool because it, you know, instead of carrying around those little bleacher seats at high school football games and things like that, this is a perfect item for parents who, you know, it looks like a normal jacket. It's nothing, you know, big or bulky, and you just unzip it and it has a little built-in seat that unfolds right from the jacket. So you can get it from Outwrap.
Cool.
I like that.
All right, Kathy, your turn.
Okay, mine is Sweeper People. And
Sweeper People.
Yeah, they're actually pens. Sweeper People pens are brand new from All in One, ASI 34256. And they look like people, men or women. And they have crazy looking static.
I don't know. Crazy look like that.
Men crazy or women.
I think it kind of looks like me if you see it on the website. They have crazy-looking static-free hair that sweeps away the dust on your keyboard, and it's really a fun idea for schools, offices, and homes. And you can email orders at allinoneline.com. And it's really cute, really cute.
Very nice. Sweeper People. All right, Kathy.
Mine's cuter.
Mine is not. I went green this week, and my product comes from Energy Saving Products, and that's ASI 52483. It is a water conservation kit. And it's it contains a toilet tank water saver, a cycle diverter, and a silent leak detector, which I chose this product because I need one of those for one of my toilets
leak
at home. Yeah, I know one of the toilets has
a
leak.
Know?
Thank you, Craig, for that. I know because every once in a while it will just flush itself.
Maybe you have ghosts.
Maybe I do have ghosts. That's not something I really thought of.
We need a ghost indicator.
All right, before we go, Andy is going to give us a couple tips on how to write a better email subject line. Andy, go.
Okay, first off, this is actually really interesting because I learned this in school and I never thought that it was, you know, very important, but there's definitely a science behind it. You have to, this is basically the first thing that people see, you know, when they see who it's from and the subject line, it basically invites the reader to care. So you have to cut through all the noise and capture their attention within seconds, basically. First thing, understand your target audience. You need to know the types of products and services that would appeal to your demographic, as well as the tone that they're expecting from you. Stay away from questions. You don't want to say, you know, do you want to save money? That automatically looks like spam, you know, right away. And the problem with that is sometimes those kinds of questions get filtered into their spam, so they may not even get the email altogether.
And stay away from words like free and guarantee.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Those will get caught by spam filters mm-hmm. as well. All right, one more quick tip.
It has to be persuasive without crossing the line. So you can say win a free trip to Hawaii in a subject line, but if the details within the email say you have to do this and this and this and this, you know, you've closed the door to a lot of people and they may not ever open another email from you again.
Gotcha.
So, and don't use the CeeLo song.
Yeah.
In the subject line.
To bring it all back to CeeLo. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Andy. We'll put that article on our website so you can see all the tips. Well, unfortunately, we are all out of time for today, but make sure to tune in again next week when comedian Wayne Brady will be calling into the
Ooh,
show
yeah.
and entertaining us and you. Everybody, have a good day.